XAML developers, you drag them over from the toolbox, these XAML controls that make your application awesome. Wouldn't it be great to talk about them? That's what we're going to do on this episode of Dev Radio. Hi, and welcome to the next episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. I'm Jerry, and I'm here with Micah Lewis, one of the PMs on the XAML platform team, who owns bunches of controls, and we're going to talk about all those controls. But before we do, Micah, tell us a little bit about who you are.
Great. So I've been at Microsoft for almost 10 years now and spent the first good part of that working in Office on a bunch of internal stuff. And then more recently, I worked on Windows Phone when we were doing an 8.1 and getting closer to having everything converged and providing that same API, and then more recently working on Windows 10.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, first of all, I want to just thank you for being back on the show. But only you and I could joke about that. That's hilarious. Nobody gets the joke but us. All right, cool. All right, well, you've got tons of controls that are kind of under your umbrella of what you're controlling or what you are managing. And it's going to take a while. And there's some of them are going to we're going to talk some serious stuff about them. Let's start with the easy ones. You simply can't build an application without a button. You own the button. Tell me a little bit about the button and what it looks like and how it's changed in Windows 10.
Yeah, so you look at the button today from Windows 10, if you were to compare it to Windows 8 and 8.1 for Windows Phone, you see some similarities, but some small changes, you know. In general, the functionality hasn't really changed. It's still a button. You can still invoke it and do what you need to do. But just the colors that you might see in some of the states, how it appears, may be a little different. And then another thing we've done that is worth just calling out, and this isn't just button, this is kind of generally for all the controls, is we look at the footprint size and try and think through some things like how hard is it for someone to lay these controls down and get the right visuals that they want. So one of the things that tends to affect that is the keyboard focus rect. You know, in the past, you'd look at the focus rect and there'd be the button, the edge, and then outside of it there's a little bit of space, then you get the focus rect. And to do that, we had to make the control a certain size, was whatever the size was.
Let me make sure developers are following along. So the focus rect is that dotted line whenever it has the current focus. That means you can hit enter on your keyboard, basically, and you can go from there. And so in Windows 8.1, it was pretty big, and it extended kind of outside of the button a little bit.
Yeah, it had that default look of being outside the bounds of the button, even though it really was. It just made the button have to be a little bit bigger. And so for Windows 10, what you'll see is that rectangle now appears in the same footprint size as the visual button. And so when you think about laying it out, you might say, oh, the button should be, 48 pixels tall by 96 or something. And that's not going to cause any weirdness in terms of, oh, well, did I leave enough room for the focus rect? And how's that going to work? Is it going to be clipped off? So,
and you know, a lot of people, developers, will go into the template of a button, and they'll see exactly how that focus rectangle is drawn, and it's drawn with a border, and it's drawn actually with a white and a black border on top of each other. They go into the Windows 10 controls, and they look for that same border, and they're not going to see it.
Yeah, so that's a great thing you bring up. And you see this across all different controls. There's this property that's the Use System Focus Visual Rect, or something like that. I forget the exact name.
Yeah.
And you say set that to true, and then you don't have to have those visuals in the template anymore. It just the system will draw them for you based on the size of that control. And so it's a bit of a perf gain. We don't have to have these extra stuff in the control that don't need to be there. And so you save on that, and you can just have it fit how it needs to fit.
And it's a platform thing, too. You got a lot of flexibility in the platform now that if the focus had to be different for, say, HoloLens, you could do it now without having to go retemplate every control and sniff for type or something like that. But it's just one of those things that just happened over and over again, so you could build it into the platform. Same thing with border, too.
Yeah, so that's another great one to bring up. You look at some of the panels like grid, and rather than having to say grid and then border, you could just set the property on the grid itself, like border brush, and you'll get that visual that you expect to have. So again, another bit of savings and making it easier for something that's very common.
Now, there's a lot of types of buttons. You got the normal button, the push button, I guess you call it. You have the toggle button. That's the button that'll stay on when you push it. We also have hyperlink button. You own the hyperlink button?
Yeah, in fact, one thing to look at the hyperlink button that's a subtle change is that now this button has an underline on it. It didn't have it before. And one of the things that we see people doing is in the past they'd use this hyperlink button and it's different color so it stands out. You can click on it, interact with it. And this underline's there for accessibility reasons. But sometimes people say, well, I want to have something similar, but just not the underline. So how do I go about doing that? And so one of the things similar to the hyperlink button that we have that we recommend people use is this text block button style. And it's
Not
really
another
easy.
control. You won't see it in the
Exactly.
toolbox.
It's just a style you can apply. You say, button style, and then, reference it, and you'll get the very similar style to the hyperlink, but without the underline. And you can apply that any type of button. Hyperlink button though, other than the visual change, it's pretty much the same. I think one other change we may have had is that when the cursor is over it, you'll see the little hand instead of the arrow. So it's a real small, subtle change. But otherwise, it's still the hyperlink button.
I'm glad it does that. It feels like a browser that way, you know? I mean, you just kind of, you can click it because your mouse just did a little difference. Yeah, I
Yeah.
like that. The text block button is pretty awesome. The style is, and because you can make, I mean, often, honestly, I just want to retemplate the button to get rid of all the color and background and everything like that. This style really just solves the problem. With the caveat of it's only for text, right? It's not a content control anymore. It's a text control. And so you can put any kind of text you want in there and it looks really great.
Yeah, it's that scenario that you're describing. You want text, you just apply the style and you get this nice visual look.
So a lot of these controls, as we go through them, going from Windows 8 to 10, we're going to realize the biggest change is going to be this refresh on the UI, right? It looks different because the
Yeah.
design language was tweaked, right? Things are a little bit different, and we don't want Windows 10 to look like Windows 8. We want it to resemble but not look just like it, you know? And so I think a lot of this is good. So you own the buttons. Off of a button, we have things like, well, let's not talk about it yet, the flyout. I was going to bring up the flyout off the button, but let's talk about that because there's a whole suite of things that developers might want to do. Let's talk about the progress bar. So you own the progress bar. That's simple enough. 0 to 100%, right, is the idea. And what's changed in the progress bar?
So actually, the progress bar, had a very similar visual between. So one of the things we look at when we do the visuals is what did it look like on Windows Phone and versus Windows 8, because those weren't exactly the same. And so now we're trying to have a consistent look. The progress bar is one where there was actually a very similar look. And so what you'll see is still the progress bar that we had before. I think the only change, the real change that happened is the size of the bar itself. Like if you just drop one on there, it may have reserved some number of pixels in the
Oh
past.
yeah, no, it wouldn't
Yeah.
reserve any. It was so totally flat. I remember.
So there was a small change, I think, to reduce it just a bit. But otherwise, it's,
Nice. I can
no
tell you,
changes.
I dragged the progress bar like 20 times onto the page, and I'm like, something's not right here. You look at the tree and the progress, 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 progress. Nice. So these subtle little things, they're kind of developer candy, they're just something nice, a little treat after dinner sort of thing. It's really good. I would like to submit a feature request for the progress bar.
Shoot, go
Uh,
ahead.
I I would like to fe uh, some sort of is supposed to animate when I select a new value. So it goes ooh, like that rather than a bam. You know what I mean? That's just put that in the backlog, just a little call to
That's
Jerry
a good
feature.
piece of feedback. In fact, I should say, so much of our effort in Windows 10 was just trying to get these common converged controls that, we were able to make some new features in certain areas, but I hope going forward we have a chance to do more of things like this. So we'd love to hear the feedback.
The progress bar also can be indeterminate. That's where it turns into the dots that we've kind of
Yeah.
introduced with Windows Phone. So that's the straight line indeterminate progress bar. But we could also get the progress ring, which is always indeterminate, right? It's not a clock or anything like that. It's
Right.
just indeterminate, and no significant change there. It looks to me, I mean, I'm just telling you visually, it looks about the same.
Yeah, I think that one just carried forward pretty much as it was. We may have changed it so that it picks up the accent color, which is now common everywhere. So in the past on Windows 8 it was just one color. I don't remember what the
Purple.
color
It was
was. Yeah, it was kind
purple.
of a purple color.
Blueberry, I think you
Yeah,
called it
that's what it
for.
was. It's a blueberry. So now it picks up the accent color, so the user changes red, green, whatever.
Well,
That's
if there's
the color they'll use.
anything, and this goes with progress bar too, the best feature that you introduced in 10 is that the foreground property, when I set the color of the dots or the line, totally works. Okay. Totally works. I don't have to emerge into the theme and change the nothing. It's perfect right out of the gate. Yeah. It's really nice. That was a big deal. You know, a common question on Stack Overflow, how do I change this thing? I set foreground to white, still not white. Now yeah. You just set it to white, and it is white. So congratulations. one of the things on the progress ring, let's see, it is active, had to be set to false when it was when its visibility was collapsed. Otherwise, it still had a small cost to it. Is that still on the backlog, or is that something that's in this control?
I think that's still in the backlog. I know that's one thing where it feels like each release we kind of look at, because it's a bit of a tricky thing to make sure we're not eating resources. And so, you know, if it's still not working quite right, that's definitely something we're going to have to go look at again.
Yeah. It's funny, these controls, you feel like you're done and you're done forever, but these developers are always finding little things, right? Oh, my gosh. All right. So similar to a progress bar is the slider bar, right? It's a very similar visual. Not the most complicated these so far, right? It'll be just a line that fills with color. It's not too hard. The slider is a little more sophisticated. It has a grabber that I can grab and move side to side. What am I looking at in Windows 10?
So I'd say, you know, the most common thing, again, is the change in the visuals. I know we went through a bit of a phase, if people were in the Insider program, where the slider, the thumb itself, was looked like a little bit of a pill that was on its side. And, you know, one of the things we got feedback on was people saying, wow, we really don't like this. They had some strong comments on that. So we ended up, you know, flipping it back.
You might have paraphrased.
So it's now vertical, similar to what you may have seen in Windows 8.1, where, you know, it was the rectangle thumb that was vertical. Yeah, and so you get a similar look now. But otherwise, you know, a lot of the stuff on the slider is still the same. So
still looks the same, still feels the same. I think it's good for all these controls for developers to know that other work that's gone into it is it detects whether or not it's mouse, it detects whether or not it's finger, and it shifts things like touch size and all of these, or hit target size and things like that, to make sure that it's appropriate no matter where you go. And the sliders... All the controls do that.
Yeah, in fact, that reminds me, one thing I should mention with slider, it used to be that in the past, if you were to just drop it onto an empty page, I think it would take up the whole page. And so one of the things we did look at in terms of sizing was, you know, what's the right size? Do we really want it expanding the full size like that? Probably not. And so now if you were to drop it on the page, I think it's got like a 44 pixel height, which should be big enough for someone to use their thumb. It works well with mouse. But it's not going to take up all that extra space it doesn't need to. And so that's, again, one of those small things that we go through as we look at the controls and making sure they work well for people.
And, you know, some developers may not realize, when you said 44, it's actually significant because it's a divisible of 4. Almost everything we're doing now on the XAML canvas is a divisible of 4. And so when you said 44, I was like, okay, it's 11 units up. There you go. It makes sense to me.
Yeah.
All right, so another backlog item I'd like for you to toss on, call it the Jerry backlog item for the slider.
I'm taking notes.
Yeah, I know, I can tell. The grabber, you know, I love the grabber. I'd love to have two grabbers and be able to, you know, like a price range or something like that, be a sweet feature for the slider, the V-next.
Yeah, excellent idea. We'll put that on the backlog.
All right, great. Doesn't sound sarcastic at all. Okay, we talked about the toggle button, and so no significant stuff changed in the toggle button. It's just that ability to push it and hold it down, kind of like the command button in WinForms was back in the day. And then we also have, so there's a confusion in my mind sometimes when I should use the toggle button and when I should use the toggle switch, two controls that have very similar names. They look different, but what's your idea? When should a developer pick between those?
I'd say, like, you know what, when we often see people using things like the toggle switch are things in like the settings context. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got my app and I've got a bunch of settings, and I may have a number of things I turn on and off, and I want to be able to quickly scan through and see which ones are on, which ones are off. And so the toggle switch works great for that because you can kind of line them up and just do that quick visual scan. The toggle button you might use in other situations where it's I click here and it's just meant to show, hey, this is on or off at this time.
Kind of like when you're picking your pricing plan in Azure. You can have standard, I can't remember what they are, but whatever they are, and you can click one and the others kind of go on and off. Sort of like a radio button feel, but not the radio button effect, right? It's right. Developers are the ones that are doing this.
Exactly.
There's no group or whatever. I love the new toggle switch, by the way, the way it looks in Windows 10. Because in Windows 8, I never knew if it was on or off. Does filled with white mean on, or does filled with blue mean on? You know, I never really was sure. I kind of knew that slide to the right was on, so I kind of just took it for granted that way. But it's nice. When you build controls like this, how much do you have to think about accessibility? Is it just native in the base control, or is there a lot of thinking around it?
There's a fair amount. One of the things, when you look at high contrast, if you're on the desktop, there's all these different schemes you can be in for high contrast. I think there's four. And someone can define their own, so you may have more. And, the colors that get used, it's very limited. You might have like 8 colors or so, and so that affects which colors you use and where you put them so that you don't end up with stuff all of a sudden blending together that wasn't before. And so there's quite a bit that thought has to go into that, and it does definitely affects the design of how we do these controls. So anyways, one other thing I should mention with toggle switch, I almost forgot. A change we did make with toggle switch is that in the past the text would appear on the left side, are you watching the screen? And then the button itself was on the right side, and we've switched those. And part of that is to help with localization, so that as people localize their apps, and you may have text that's going to, to run a long time. Right, exactly. And you still want to have that ability to scan down quickly through what's on and what's off. And so by switching the sides, it makes that easy to, you can still scan, and then you're not going to have text that messes it up, makes it really hard for you to get things lined up properly.
And we'll put the visual up in the video here. But, developers listening there are like, who cares, right? But no, it's, little things like this make a big difference in the usability of these controls, and as a result, your application as well. So it's a big deal. I like that switch as well. I like a lot of these kind of changes. Another button we didn't talk about was the repeater button, and that's the button that the click event just fires as long as you're pushing down, basically. And it's pretty handy. You gotta be careful with it. All right. So the tooltip. You also own the tooltip. The tooltip's simple enough. It's just a content control that shows up when you mouse over any control? Does it work everywhere?
I think so. I mean, I have to go back and check if there's anything that doesn't work on. But generally, you just do tooltip service, and you say, here's the tooltip, and once you hover it, it appears. And there haven't been a lot of changes on tooltip per se. I know that one thing is that in the past, it didn't work on the phone, so if you tried to use it, it wouldn't show up at all. Yeah. But now it does. And so it's converged, so it works everywhere. And there's been the small visual changes. Now it has maybe a different background color, and it's got the border around it. So, it's still the tooltip. Works like a tooltip.
How do you get the tooltip to show up if it's on the phone? Because I don't have a mouse on my phone.
If you have it, you can still push, press, and hold, and that would cause a tooltip to appear. Or if you have, I think that's the main way. If you're just using touch, you just press and hold, and it'll cause it to show.
If tooltip is important to my application, obviously I'm not going to have the press and hold gesture on that, right? Because I want it to be part of the tooltip instead of something else that shows the right click gesture, I guess, right? For touch, or right tap.
Right tapped, yeah.
Right tapped. They would conflict. So if you're like, hey, it's not showing up, but my context menu is, well, maybe you should think about that. They're probably conflicting with one. What do you think about putting a tooltip on a repeater button?
Yeah, that's a good question. What would happen there? I'm not sure off the top of my head.
Put that on your backlog.
Yeah, that's good.
Speaking of context menus, so one of the things that we had in Windows 8 was the ability to have menus, right? We had a menu you could create, and that would show up as a button flyout, and so you could have top left, right, bottom, and full screen, which would be more appropriate probably for phone. But now we can use that, obviously, as a context menu as well, right? I could right-click. I really could have before. It was just trickier. I could right-click, show a menu. But now it's a much richer experience, too. You've really enhanced the menu.
That's right. In fact, now you'll see with the menu flyout is we've got the ability to do these cascading menus like a context menu. And so, when you think, how do I get a context menu in my app? Menu flyouts, the answer for you.
That's right. And if you're looking for the menu context property, like if you're a WPF developer, look no further. It's not there.
Yeah. But what someone might do is they might listen to the event, like the right tapped event, or the holding event, or holding gesture, and then you could pop up your menu flyout. And, yeah. you know, I'm sure we'll get the visual on screen, and you could see you can have these different levels. And the other thing to note is that the menu flyout, we've added the API so that you can cause it to render outside your window. So, you know, if you have a button down on one side of the screen,
that's
off
a
to
big
the far
deal.
Right. Yeah,
yeah,
I mean,
you could have a really small app like Calculator or something.
Yeah. Yeah, and you want to be able to make sure that it looks like a context menu, just like the rest of the system. And so this allows you to do that.
And meanwhile, it's perfect for touch and everything as well. And so, and you have the check boxes, the stuff that you kind of expect, right? Little icon separators, you know, make them bold, things like that, that they weren't there for 8, a couple of things, right? And now they are, right?
Yeah.
Now you start really leveraging.
And another thing to mention, you know, you say touch. The menu flyout is one where it responds differently when it's open from touch versus the mouse. So like when you open it with touch, it'll be a slightly larger size, but when you open it with your mouse, or sorry, mouse is smaller, touch is a little bit larger.
Yeah, because you can, everybody's a,
makes
like
it
a
easier to hit. Yeah.
Yeah. And how does it determine that? Is it based on the continuum setting, or is it based on, what's happening?
So what it's doing, it's actually looking in at what the last used input was, and it's basing it on that. And
okay.
So even if someone, let's say I've got a button and the developer, am handling it in the right tapped event to show it, then you know I'm the one that's programmatically triggering it, but it knows, okay, the last input that we saw was touch, and so we're going to base it on the touch sizing versus
nice.
Mouse.
Yeah, that's really nice. So even if I have I could have one of those 2-in-1 machines, you know, or maybe just a touch screen where I'm using my mouse for everything. And then like I've taught myself, it's weird. I do this all the time. I use my mouse and keyboard for everything, and then all of a sudden I just go and touch a button. It's the craziest thing.
Yeah.
And so either way, so you can mix mode it like that, and it knows which is which, and it shows the correct one based on what started it.
It should do the right thing. There's probably some edge case somewhere where it won't, but we should leave that out.
We'll edit that out in post-production. That'll be great. So the tooltip shows up. The menu shows up. So we have these things, and they kind of fly out. But we literally have a fly out as well. And
that's right.
So it's the fly out that holds a menu if you want it. But we have a generic fly out kind of base that you could put anything. It's just a content control. You could put absolutely anything you want in it. And that you own the fly out as well. And tell me a little bit about it.
Yeah, so like as you described, it's a content control. You can put whatever you want inside. And the flyout has, I think there's a max size. I don't remember what the number is, but it's fairly wide. You know, on the mobile device, it's probably going to end up going most of the screen, you know, depending upon what your content is. But it's, you know, it's just your basic flyout. You can attach it to any buttons. There's on all button types, there's this dot flyout property.
Yeah.
And so it makes it very easy to attach it. And then when you invoke the button, this flyout will automatically show for you. And it has what we call light dismiss behavior. So as the user, they tap outside or they hit escape or do something like that, hit the back button, the flyout dismisses.
And you can literally put anything, even a little mini form you could put in there, you know, because you might want that for like maybe you click the filter button and then it comes up with a little mini form of filter options and you select from those. You literally could put anything. I've got a suggestion for your backlog.
Okay.
I would like a flyout attached property that says flyout dot, when I click this button, close the flyout that's containing it. That would be really handy. So today, I mean, that's an issue today, right? I click the button and it does the work, but the flyout stays open. So I've written a behavior, the close flyout behavior, and that I put on a button. Am I doing that the right way?
That sounds like a fine way to do it. You know, it's great feedback, too, of making that easier. Because as you said, it's like, you know, if you have a button or something else, we don't automatically close the flyout. You know, we leave that up to the developer. There's other controls like slider. You might move it around a couple times and do it, and you don't necessarily want the flyout to disappear. But making that easier for that scenario you described, you know, that's something we'll definitely put on the backlog.
Sure, you will. Here's another option. You could put it just on the button that says this button is a light dismiss button or something like that. You know what? Let's stop talking about possibilities like that. Let's talk about what we've actually got. All right. The next is, so flyout, we're still talking about flyout. There's a couple other flyouts that exist in the toolbox. You're going to see them, or maybe you're typing them and you see them in autocomplete and you're wondering what they are. Maybe you used them in phone, and I think it's worth talking about the picker flyout and the list picker flyout.
Yeah, it's good you bring those up. So these are two things where they used to only be on the phone in the past. And, you know, as part of making this one platform, we brought those over. But you know, to be honest, they're not really well supported right now, and so we don't recommend people
using them.
They're
really full screen.
That's right. Yeah, you use one, it's going to take up the entire screen. It's not probably not the experience you want on, let's say, your desktop or, you know,
or the HoloLens.
Yeah, exactly.
Whoa!
And so instead, we'd recommend if you're using them, you know, for those people who are using them in their app, there's something you could do instead for your Windows 10 app. You know, if it's like the picker flyout, you might want to use a flyout that just has some custom UI so you can provide that picker experience. And for a list picker flyout, you know, if you're just doing single selection, you could replace it and just use a menu flyout. Yeah. But if you have more of a multi-select scenario, you've got a list, you want to, you know, tag a few things, you know, a flyout with a list view in it that's set to do multi-select would probably be your best bet.
Yeah, makes sense to me. Here's the real takeaway. If you're a developer that uses the list picker flyout or the picker flyout, it still works. We brought it into Windows 10 so that your app will converge real nicely. If you're not using it and you're thinking about using it, don't use it, because that's not where we want to go in the future. That's really what we're trying to say.
Yeah, although I would actually say there's probably a bug or two in the list picker flyout that we just recommend you don't use it for Windows 10.
So maybe there are even other reasons not to use it.
Yeah, it's one of those things where as we look at how much time we can invest in getting all the controls ready, I think these two just, we weren't able to get them really to the level we want them to be at. And so we just recommend just don't use them.
Yeah, I was on a conversation thread where we were talking about the calendar picker, not one of your controls, but we'll talk about it anyway for a second. And anyway, it was whenever your time zone was set to Caracas, then there was some sort of bug, right? And I wrote back, I said, well, what's the population of Caracas? Does this really, it's one of the, of course, that's not what I really meant, but it's, how many people are really using the list picker flyout, and what's the future of it? How much investment does Microsoft really want to put into it? Developers need to think about that sort of thing when they're picking a control like that. The other controls are different. Since we're talking about it, and I jokingly said HoloLens, all of these controls really do work on HoloLens.
Yeah, to the best of my knowledge. Now, it's a converged platform, so there's no reason why they shouldn't work.
Yeah, and Xbox, and Raspberry Pi, and all of these. So when we're talking about these aren't Windows. We talk about Windows and phone a lot, you know, but we're really just talking about this is the UWP tool set, and if you're writing for anything that UWP is on, these are the controls that are available to you. So I think it's good.
Right.
With the flyout, before we leave flyout, I want to step one step back to menu flyout. I want to give you a backlog item. Last time, I promise. Or maybe you could talk to me about why. No, you don't have to talk about why, but I just want to. The menu is a static menu. I think it'd be awesome if there was an item source in the menu flyout where all the menu items pop up, because, you know, I might right-click one thing and it doesn't deserve to have those menu items. Right now I handle it by disabling them, and, you know, that works as well. Just, you know, I know that you're just sitting on your hands. You have nothing to do. So you could put that in your backlog, too. That's great. All right. So we're done with flyouts. Let's talk about controls that you see often as well. When I'm in Windows 8, and I want to interact and do some commanding inside my application, I swipe up from the bottom, and one of two things happens. I get a command bar I'll get an app bar on the bottom with little circle buttons, and then at the top I'll get a slide down, also an app bar with maybe some sort of navigation sort of thing like that. Those are both with the app bar. And then along comes Windows 8.1, and we introduce the command bar. And the command bar is our ability to put, it was a little more limited. You couldn't just put anything in there in Windows 8.1. And now we're in Windows 10. We still have an app bar. We still have a command bar. And a lot of developers are maybe confused picking between those two. Are they the same control that does everything?
They're similar. They're close. But, you know, there's some definite differences, and it's worth calling out. So, you know, you think about the app bar. When we first introduced it, it was, you know, kind of a blank canvas. You put whatever you want inside of it, and it would respond to this edgy gesture that was there and well-supported in Windows 8 and 8.1. And then along came the command bar, as you mentioned. And the command bar was this control that was converged. So the API was there for both phone and desktop that you could use. And it made it a little bit easier to put your commands onto the screen. And it was this common API, but yet the experience on like the desktop versus the phone was tailored for that device.
You couldn't just use the app bar on the phone because, I mean, phone had buttons. They weren't XAML.
Yeah, and you're dealing with a lot less space. And so how do you show those buttons in a way that maximizes space for the rest of your app, but still allows you to have the number of commands you might need to show to the user. And so the command bar was there to help with that problem. And similarly on desktop, you know, in 8.1 we had this idea of resizing the window. And so the command bar would help with that. If you put your buttons on there and you start resizing the window down, it would change the size of those buttons. It would drop the labels and make them closer together. So it would help in that sense. Whereas the app bar, you know, it was totally up to you to solve that scenario if you're using the app bar.
Okay. I'm seeing the line between them then. So the command bar has a lot of built-in logic to make it look better on depending on the layout, right? If it's on phone or here or there, wherever it is, it's going to do some stuff to make it look better and better. By the way, I love the fact that the dot, dot, dot has come over to desktop. That was beautiful. Can't tell you how many times.
So that's great. You know, we think about the command bar. So the app bar, you know, one thing people would ask, like, well, which one should I use? And I think the guidance would be, if you're building a new app, you should use the command bar. If you have an existing app that you want to bring upgrade to work on Windows 10, and you're already using the app bar, you know, you can continue to use the app bar. We've made some investments there to make it easier for you. But again, if you're building a new app or if you want to get some future functionality, that goodness that comes out of stuff, then definitely look at the command bar.
Because if I do it in the app bar, then the app bar it's all me. I've got all that work. If it's got to resize or rework at all for any sort of change, it's all me. Okay.
That's right. And another thing that we should point out with the command bar that's new for Windows 10 is, you know, there's this content property. It wasn't really respected. It didn't do anything in the past. It does now in Windows 10. And so if you didn't want it, let's say you really wanted to get all control of everything and you still wanted to use something kind of like the app bar, but you know, you could use the command bar instead, and you could use the content. You could put whatever you want inside, and that's the area you'd
do
whatever.
So I have primary buttons and secondary buttons, and so those are the regular buttons. I hit the dot dot dot, and I see the secondary buttons. Mm-hmm. But the content is everything, and so I could overlap those and kind of confuse things with primary buttons and secondary buttons. I've actually used the command bar as kind of a title on my pages. And then I put in the content, I put the page name, text, and then I keep using the buttons and stuff. Kind of looks like the MSN apps when you do that. I feel like they must do something like that because somehow they weasel up some text up there.
Yeah, or you could look at the Photos app as another one where on the left side they've got some information about the photo and on the right you'll have some buttons, some commands. And so it makes it great to mix the two of both these structured commands and whatever unstructured information you want to show to the side.
And just like app bar, once I put it in content, I'm responsible again for making sure it looks good wherever it goes. But if I'm looking at the command bar, I've got it used, I've got everything, I love it, everything is great, but I wish that I could put a search box in there. That's why content is there. Now content will allow me just basically to do everything.
That's right.
Now, it used to be they were only at the bottom. Command bar was only at the bottom, and I could use app bar at the top. Now the command bar can be at the top as well, and everywhere, I guess?
Pretty much. You don't have to put it just at the top and bottom, although it works great there. It's a very common place to put it. But you could place it elsewhere in your app. And the control itself is a little more adaptive than it has been in the past. So, again, we wanted to have that tailored experience for, you know, smaller screens versus larger screens. And so what you'll see is the menu that shifts or comes up, that will change based on your window size. So if you're on a larger window size, then it'll size to the items that are in the menu.
It won't be full screen.
Exactly. It won't be small. So it'll look more like a toolbar type experience. Mm-hmm. But if you're on a very small screen, then
like a phone,
exactly, it's going to shift and it's going to take up the full screen. You'll still get experience similar to what you saw in the past on Windows Phone. And so it's a nice feature that, you know, you don't have to worry about, and the control just does that for you to automatically provide the best experience for the user.
So the takeaway would be the app bar, if you dare, right? The command bar handles it all for you, and it also has a content control if you dare, but otherwise it takes care of everything for you, including all this accessibility and touch points and everything else, all built in. And when we rev it and things get revved, right, as it gets revved, all that stuff gets revved up too. The dot content, that doesn't get revved, right? That's still up to the developer no matter
what. That's right.
All right, so that's the app bar. That's the command bar. I can see why they both exist. Oh, one question that's worth saying is, what about that gesture? What about the swipe up gesture? Still good?
Oh, yeah. So right now, like that swipe gesture was really the edge gesture that Windows had. And, you know, when we moved to Windows that aren't just the full screen, it made less sense. You know, there was feedback as well from people around having this gesture. And so That's one of the big reasons that now when you drop this control into your app canvas, it won't be hidden by default. You'll actually see the bar, you'll see the dot, 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 and you can use that to interact with it and open it. That's also one good thing to point out between the app bar and the command bar. You know, the command bar is now, you can put it in all kinds of different places. In the past, the app bar, if you were to right-click, that was another way that you could cause it to open.
Oh, yeah. Or Windows Z. Windows Z was another one.
That's right. And so we didn't think it made sense to have that happen on the command bar because you may use it in a number of different contexts. But again, legacy apps that are moving forward, they're using the app bar.
Yeah.
You know, you right-click and it'll still respond to that gesture versus the command bar, which won't.
And it will only if it's in the top commands and bottom commands section of my page or no matter what?
I think for the app bar, it's no matter where you put it, it responds to that right click.
So that's, you know, that might be important for developers looking for some sort of visual alignment with their older apps.
Yep.
Yeah, I see that. It's nice. All right, so that's the bar and both of those, right? I can see why you'd pick one or the other and why you'd more than likely 90% of the time be picking command bar over the app bar. Now let's talk about styling, command bar styling. Interesting.
Yeah. So one of the things that we do see that, you know, people run into and they're kind of like scratching their head a bit, and, you know, we want to take a moment to explain is in the past, where we really just had that bar on Windows, you know, if you want to change the background color, you might just say background blue, and that would change the color for the whole bar. But now we've got both the bar and we've got this menu, and it might change size and look a different way on desktop or small screens versus large screens. And so we've treated it as it's a part of the control. You can style it separately. It has a different look by default. And so if someone says, well, how do I change the color?
Yeah, how do you change the color?
Yeah.
Of the secondary menu.
Of the secondary, right. So someone could still say, look, I'm going to set the background of the command bar, and that's going to change the color of the bar. But we have this command bar overflow presenter, and you can target that style on the command bar itself. And so you could say, look, I want to make this be a light blue versus the dark blue because I want to still have that visual separation. It's a part that kind of comes and goes.
Yeah.
But something that still relates to the bar itself. So someone could do that if they're trying to brand their app to make it look a certain way. They can say, look, make the background this, change the border brush to be something similar.
And all I have to do is just set its style in the present, in the, as a property of the overflow. Of the command bar, or just put it up globally. They'll all get it as well.
Right.
All right. So that's cool. I like that a lot. All right. So that's the command bar. Let's move to the split view. There's a lot of attention to the split view, sometimes referred to as the hamburger menu control. And I think it's, let's just talk about what it is before we start talking about all the excitement around it. This control doesn't have a UI. It's just meant for what?
Yeah, a good way to think about it is a building block. You know, that's how we think about it as a building block. And it's more for layout. You know, you've got these two areas that you might put whatever content you want, and you want to control that interaction. You know, when one of them comes into view, it maybe pushes the other one out of view, or it just the first one stays, and you just want to have something temporarily come over to the side but maybe disappear. It's kind of like settings fly out in the past that people may have used in their apps. And you could get an experience like that with this control. What we do see people often doing, as you described, is what we'll call the hamburger pattern. But, you know, the control...
Which is not just a button that opens and closes it. I mean, that's all that it is.
Yeah. But, you know, this control, the split view, it's not integrated into the navigation framework like your frame and page. And like you said, there's no built-in
it's
hamburger
button.
It's
closer related to the grid than anything.
Right. Yeah. And so, as you mentioned, there's no hamburger button. People can build this, the experience that they want. You know, one of the common things we see is people saying, well, how do I get a hamburger button? There is at least a glyph that you can get to and use to create a button that opens your split view.
You can find that in this Sago MDL2 assets font that's installed on all Windows 10 devices.
That's right. It's everywhere, so you should be able to use it and expect it to work.
Which is just three lines. It's an easy little thing. And so I can put that. I can use another thing that you own is a font icon. And so I can use font icon to show that. Font icon. Let's see. There's a handful of them, actually. font icon, and because this is important for bit buttons and stuff that you might use here. Font icon, symbol icon, bitmap icon. There's four, I thought.
Path icon is the other
path
one.
Path icon, yeah. And so first, why would you use an icon? One of these, just called the family of icon things. Why would you use this instead of a text box?
Yeah, so one of the things that font icon specifically has is it's a small thing, but sometimes people might have a glyph, and you want it to also flip when your flow direction changes. Mm. So normally text gets treated a certain way, and even though flow directions may change, you know, the text doesn't change at all. It remains whatever direction it was going. But on the font icon, you're specifying a glyph from a font, and then you can add this property that's, I think, mirrored when flow direction left to right or something. I forget the name of the property, but that will cause it to flip the glyph when the flow direction changes. So if you're building a control and you want to have an icon provide a certain visual and you need that to change with the flow direction for mirroring right to left, the font icon is great for that. So that's one way, written reason why you might want to use it.
That's a user beware a little bit too, because if you are using the back button and you're using a font icon, you don't want the back. I mean, back is back this way when all the text? Do other cultures, is back that direction?
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
I mean, look at browsers have caused us to think back is that way. It has to be. Yeah. We're getting off script, Mike. So, all right, keep going. So the path icon, I like the path icon. That's where I can draw a path in XAML, and it'll use that. So usually something small, but something that I'm not finding in SIGO MDL2 assets. I need my own, be custom. I can just jam it right there. I don't have to worry about anything it handles at all inside the icon logic. And then bitmap is what you think.
Yep, exactly. One thing bitmap does is it'll automatically strip out the colors so that you get more of a solid color based on the foreground. So let's say you had a given icon that you want to use, but you don't want to have both a dark and a light for the different themes. Well, you just provide the one, and it'll automatically color as you change the theme from
That's
one to
awesome.
The other. So it's a bit of savings.
What if my icon is a rainbow?
You know, I think what it does, it's based on, it does a bit of an alpha mask. And so, you know, the transparent stuff, it drops out, and then those whatever is there, based on the opacity level, it'll color it to the foreground.
So font icon is handy because any font you find doesn't have to be SIGO. It doesn't have to be anything. You can just put it in there. You can put the code for it. Symbol icon, though, is what is symbol? Where does it actually pull from? Is it SIGO MDL2 assets?
Yeah, it does. So in the past, it that's a good thing that we should mention is in the past on Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8.1, it would reference the SIGOI UI symbol font. But now for Windows 10, where we've got these updated set of assets that we have, it will reference this SIGOI MDL2 assets font. And so if people are using the font icon, it's the same thing. If you're using the font icon and if you didn't specify the font family for the SIGOI MDL2 assets,
it defaults.
It defaults to it. So again, if you have an old app and you're upgrading, then you may all of a sudden be wondering like, what happened to my glyphs? Some of them aren't there because the fonts aren't exactly the same except in certain places. And so just something to be aware of.
Just need to specify the font family. So, but I can go to symbol. I can say glyph equals. It gives me a nice little drop down of all the glyphs. And that's where I'd find the hamburger button.
Not on symbol, you wouldn't.
Okay.
But for font icon, you can use the, there's a glyph. It's, I think, E700 that you could get the hamburger. That'd be good feedback of, hey, we'd like to make it easier for people to use this glyph. Maybe we should just add the symbol dot navigation.
Yeah, you don't have to do that. I feel like I've already taken up too much space in the backlog. Filter by Jerry. Don't do that. All right, so let's talk about the split view one more time. So the split view is two sections, the pane and the content. Each one is kind of like two grids side by side that you can put anything inside of. And the pane is the thing that where typically you would put a menu. It can be hidden. It could be overlaid. It has two of being wide or narrow, which I think you call inline or compact, right? Mm-hmm. And you can set, there's a whole bunch of variables where you can set that to be multiple things could be supported at the same time. Kind of like how the menu is, the hamburger menu is implemented on the web today. You see it lots of different ways. And depending on how wide the screen is, you might want to shift that around as well. And it is, and in the content, one weird thing that developers might be surprised by is that the content is intended, like your vision, is that the content holds the frame.
Mm.
That's right. Not that it interacts with the frame, because it's not a navigation control.
Yeah, so if people are trying to build that hamburger experience, you're probably going to put your frame inside the content, as you mentioned, and then in the pane, you're going to use something else to represent the different areas of your app that a user can navigate to. And one thing you'll probably look at doing, that you have to be aware of if you're thinking about, I want to run this exact same app on the phone versus the desktop, is how is this going to interact with things like the Chrome on the phone? Like the phone has the system tray or status bar at the top.
Yeah, at the top, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's, you know, by default, that might draw over some of your app, and you kind of want to avoid that if you've all of a sudden got this hamburger button that's up in the top left.
And it can take up space.
Exactly. Yeah. So one of the things that, you know, people need to be aware of is this, what we call the visible bounds. Now, in phone 8 or 8.1, we did some work on the page control, which is maybe not as well known as it should be, but when the page control takes up the full screen, it will automatically adjust the content of itself to fit within the visible bounds. And so you'd say, you know, page and then content and whatever you put inside, it's not going to run underneath that status bar. And so if you're building this hamburger,
that's what you would want. Right?
Yeah, exactly. You'd probably want to put the split view inside a page and let the page be the root of your app.
Got it.
And that will help.
So it goes window.current.content. Inside that is my page. Inside that is my split view. Inside its content property is the frame, the root frame for the rest of my application.
That's
and
right.
Then inside its pane is that thing that flies over, or maybe it's always visible, where I would have some way of navigating. And a great example is basically everything that we do now, right? If you go to Windows 10, it's not hard to find a hamburger button. If you go in, if you load our MSN apps, it's easy to find the hamburger button. It's always there. I mean, it's a great demonstration. And I mean, Mike, I'll take just a second to just self-promote here for a second. Template 10 is a new project template that we're creating. Implements it exactly like we're talking about. Does everything right out of the gate so developers can kind of have it. It's AKAMS/template10. It's just steal it if you want it. All right, so there is all that. So there's a lot of kind of religious fervor around this hamburger, and it's okay, right? I mean, the reality is Windows 10 is going to be popular. We're going to have a lot of Windows 10. There's more. I just read there's more Windows 10 installs than all of OS X it's only been out 2 months, right? It's just awesome. Or maybe, no, 1 month. This is August. Not even a month. It's incredible, isn't it? I mean, it's just a number, but still, it's kind of a fun thing to say. But, I mean, like, do developers know how to use the hamburger button, Micah?
Do users know? That's a great question. You know, I think it's something they commonly see everywhere, and so there is a familiar interaction that they have with it. And if, you know, there's lots of different opinions on the web. One of the common things people talk about is how it's misused. And so I know there was a great talk that some folks from our design team gave at this last build conference that talks about you know, guidance when you're thinking about using these patterns, things you should take into account, so you don't do things that are going to cause a poorer experience for the users. Because, like you said, it's probably common, but you know, there's probably a way you can use it well, and there's plenty of ways you can use it in a bad way. And so let's you know, we want people to use it in a good way.
Yeah, but we don't need to cover all those patterns now. But it's not like Build 2015 content isn't available for free on Channel 9. They can watch it all that they want as well. Plus, I tend to think the fact that it's in Windows 10 so prevalently now, thanks to us, that we've got a pretty good shot of users knowing what that means now, because it's just everywhere. All right, so perfect. That's the split view. That's a big control. I mean, probably it's not that big of a control because there's no visual. I mean, what are we going to show on screen? I can only imagine what this video is going to show, right? Here it is. It's an empty control. It has nothing in it, but that's it. So that's the split view, and I'm glad you talked about the page bounds, because that, or the visual bounds, because that's what developers will have to do manually if they don't use a page and sniff for it as they go from devices and all these things, and just use it, right? You might think it in your mind that, hey, I'll just make the split view the root, but you're just introducing more code for really nothing. Code you're going to have to test for bugs and stuff that you're going to introduce yourself that's already been tested and done by the team like you, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Nice. Now, we covered about 30 controls right there, Micah. I was kind of hoping that, you know, you had a lot of controls to cover. I don't know how you do it, man. There's so many. It's incredible. Which one's your favorite? You know, it's kind of like asking a dad who his favorite daughter is.
We love all of them. We love all the controls.
Yeah, with the exception of the list picker flyout. You know, we're not so sure. Might have been switched at birth. We're going to have to do some DNA testing. Perfect. Micah, awesome. Awesome. If developers are looking for information on how to build UWP apps, where would you send them?
I'd send them the documentation, you know, dev.windows.com, and lots of guidance there. You know, one of the things that we've done is we try to make an effort for updating the documentation for each of the controls. So if you know you go to a given control and you read the remarks section, you know, we want to make that useful. And so, that's a great place to look as well. And, you know, certainly if there's things that aren't there, you know, we love to get the feedback and know what can we do to make that better and more actionable for people.
Where's the right place for feedback? Connect? Do you guys use Connect, or is User Voice the right place?
I think we get feedback from a number of different places. You know, we could probably post some links of here are the places that, you know, we'll definitely be looking that would be helpful for people. But there's a couple of systems, and so as long as we can get feedback funneled into those, then it'll get to us. You know, when it's in some random forum that we have no insight into, then, you know, it gets lost. And
Yeah. You're not monitoring forums.google.com then?
Yeah.
Just teasing. Awesome. Hey, I use these controls all the time. Not only are they reliable, they're also beautiful. Micah, thanks for putting so much love into them. I mean, you can kind of see it in the kind of polish around all of them. And thanks for being on the show today, too.
Well, thanks for having me.
You bet.